At the Water for Food Conference in Lincoln today, we're going to visit with Rosina Bierbaum from the University of Michigan. She's a professor in the School of Natural Resources and Environment. And Rosina, you're going to be talking climate change here at the Water for Food Conference this morning. Give us a little preview of your presentation.
Well, I guess I'm giving this sort of climate 101 lecture. So I'm going to talk about how we know that climate is changing, what impacts we've already seen today, some estimates of what the future portends as we go forward in time, and then a bit about the way forward, things that will enable us to both reduce emissions and cope with the changes already underway and those yet in store.
A lot of debate about climate change, of course, and what is causing it. I think more and more people are agreeing, yeah, the climate is changing. There's still a little disagreement about the causes of it.
I think that's interesting that there still seems to be two sides to the debate. I would argue that in the 20 years that I've studied this, the evidence has become very much stronger that the climate is changing and we understand that there are human influences that are creating this change. The buildup of the greenhouse gases is unequivocal. We measure that. We have millions of measurements of air temperature, surface temperature, water temperature. We've seen the secondary effects of the speed up of the water cycle. We're seeing in real time crops shifting in response to the temperatures. So perhaps about 120 miles crops and plants have shifted in the last 20 years alone in terms of ideal ranges. And we're seeing people experience more increased extreme events of both droughts and floods as the climate theory anticipates. So I think really there's much more science consensus than you often hear in the news media, which tends to find someone to talk about both sides of a debate as opposed to focusing on where the consensus is in the science community.
In this part of the country, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the incredibly warm and dry spring that we had last year, and now one of the record cool and wet springs we're having this year. Is that an example of the variability that we might see going forward?
Yes, there's some very new science that's coming out that suggests you might have these kind of seesaw effects, that you'll get very hot and very wet alternating with each other. But in general, the planet as a whole should be getting wetter because you're warming things up, so you're speeding up the water cycle, you're speeding up evaporation. So globally, there's more water, but it will tend to evaporate from the interior of continents more. The rain that does come from all this extra water will also tend to come in more extreme downpours. And so you do get this seesaw effect of increased drought and increased floods. So you had in Nebraska here, I think, your warmest and driest year ever last year, 96% of the state in extreme or extraordinary drought. And yes, this year you have a much wetter spring. We're actually seeing farmers adapting, if you will, to these changes. So one trend that's been noticed is farmers are buying bigger and more powerful tractors because the sometimes rainier springs allow fewer days to plant. And so when you can, you run like heck and plant them there. And so it's been very interesting to watch sales of tractors in response to these sometimes very wet springs.
What are the implications for agriculture going forward here? You know, I've heard some people say, well, it's not all bad. I mean, more moisture, as you mentioned, but what are the implications from your point of view?
So it's interesting. So it will be warmer and it will in general be wetter. But as we've just discussed, in some cases, you will have incredible years of drought. So I think figuring out what kinds of crops can do best under an increasing range of temperatures and precipitation regimes is going to be very important. Right now, we try to optimize for what we think is the climate of today. But if we're going to get more wet and more dry and more heat, I think it's very important to be sure that we're developing cultivars that can cope with all of those, and that may unfortunately mean that you don't plant something that's optimum for any one particular ideal regime, but something that can actually react to multiple changes. We're certainly going to see a shift in pests, both insect pests and weeds. And one of the unfortunate outcomes of warmer, wetter means greener world, as many people argue, is that in general, C3 plants, which tend to be weeds, tend to do better as you increase both carbon dioxide concentrations and heat. And so we are seeing in some cases weeds out competing crops. We're also seeing that warmer, wetter world can lead to pest species moving north. And so, for example, kudzu, which used to be kept in check by the frost lines and the moisture lines, are now heading on up. And we're also seeing an increase in some of the insect pest species. So we have to think about how these changes might affect agriculture before they hit us so that we can have some adaptive mechanisms. And it could make ag extension more important, not less important, so that farmers get timely information.
And what can farmers do to help this situation longer term? I mean, what would you like to see agriculture doing?
Well, agriculture is incredibly demanding on the water systems of the planet, and we're going to see increasing competition in demand for water for irrigation, water for people, water for fish, water in the great rivers to barge our coal and cool our nuclear plants. So I think that having much better attention to water use and water conservation methods will be very important going forward. Similarly, everything in agriculture, of course, depends on the productivity of the soil. And there are many things that can be done to increase the carbon content of the soil so that the soils are more productive and we don't need to add as many fertilizers, which, of course, end up creating other stresses like runoff into our waterways and eutrophication, which is becoming a very big problem in the Great Lakes, in part from fertilizer runoff as well as warmer temperatures. And, of course, we've seen that in the Gulf and many other water bodies for a long time. And then finally, attention to pesticide use, which, as I say, may become more important, or herbicides may become more important as those pesky plants and insects do better under a warmer, wetter world. However, of course, we can't keep adding that ad nauseum. So thinking about creative ways to control pests that may not require the addition of so many chemicals should be an important wave of the future as well.
And as far as government policy is concerned, what needs to be done, or are we doing enough at this point?
So I do wear another hat. I'm on the President's Council of Advisors in Science and Technology, and we've put together a report on what the future of agricultural research needs to be. And in that report, we talk about preparing the next generation of agricultural experts to really be able to handle a number of these very difficult issues and have much higher tech, both information technology and genetics understanding, to be able to adapt with the changing climate adaptively. We also talk about providing more peer-reviewed research dollars so that people can begin to understand the changes in the agricultural system and how these can be tackled appropriately. And I think long-term, the government needs to think about how their subsidy programs can get multiple bangs for the buck. So, for example, there's quite a bit of money that comes through farm programs, and something on the order of $6 billion a year. And thinking about how things like the Conservation Reserve Program can not only avoid erosion, but can also enable habitat protection and also perhaps carbon sequestration, get multiple benefits that will be, in fact, kind of adaptive for the landscapes of the U.S. system, is a very important thing going forward.